We're at the second page of this timeline, about where the dates restart. Joab besieges Rabbah of Ammon, and David stays in Jerusalem. This is when things start to go south for David. He is a man after God's own heart, but he is not a perfect man, and that will be very evident with this next section. Now, recall all the dates that are given here now, from now until the death of David, are given, are based on an assumption concerning Solomon. They're all surrounding Solomon's birth, and I'm assuming that he was 20 years old when he becomes king. And so that means that he is 20 years old when he, halfway in between David's reign, he's born. And then a few years before that, these things occur in 2 Samuel 11 and 1 Chronicles 20, at least the first half of 1 Chronicles 20. 1 Chronicles 20 actually spans many years. There's a sort of a break in between. It's a very short chapter even. But there is an interesting break here. You see up here, this first half is chapter 20, verses 1 through 3, and then it jumps down here to chapter 20, verse 4. And then it goes on, talking about some of the things that happen in his latter years, in David's latter years. So there is a huge gap there in 1 Chronicles 20, where a lot of things happen that are not recorded, but they are recorded in 2 Samuel. And so that's where we're going to focus most of our energy for the next little while. But before we do that, let's go to 1 Chronicles 20. And we'll see how similar some of these verses are so that we can understand where exactly the break is. Somebody read verses 1 through 3, please.
It happened in the spring of the year, at the time kings go out to battle, that Joab led out the armed forces and ravaged the country of the people of Ammon, and came and besieged Rehoboam. But David stayed at Jerusalem, and Joab defeated Rabbah and overthrew it. Then David took their king's crown from his head and found it to weigh a talent of gold, and there was precious stones in it, and it was set on David's head. Also, he brought out the spoil of the city in great abundance, and he brought out the people who were in it and put them to work with saws and iron picks and with axes. So David did to all the cities of the people of Ammon. Then David and all the people returned to Jerusalem.
All right. That, all that happens in there includes, at least there's a break in verse 1 where all that happens with Bathsheba occurs, all that happens with Bathsheba and Uriah occurs. And then after verse 3, all that happens with Solomon being born, well, I think Solomon being born is before that, but after that is all the stuff that happens as a result of David's sin. And that's chapters 13 through 20, 21 of 2 Samuel. And that's a long time that is talked about here. So again, we're now going to be focusing on 2 Samuel for a little while. So let's turn to 2 Samuel, and we'll see the similarity in verse 1, 2 Samuel chapter 11. And someone read verse 1.
It happened in the spring of the year, the time when kings go out to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him, and all Israel, and they destroyed the people of Ammon and besieged Rabbah. But David remained at Jerusalem.
All right. Then let's jump to 12:26. And read to the end of the chapter.
Now Joab fought against Rabbah of the people of Ammon, and took the royal city. And Joab sent messengers to David and said, I have fought against Rabbah and have taken the city's water supply. Now therefore gather the rest of the people together and encamp against the city and take it, lest I take the city and it be called after my name. So David gathered all the people together and went to Rabbah and fought against it and took it. And then he took the king's crown from his head, and it weighed was a talent of gold with precious stones, and it was set on David's head. Also he brought out the spoil of the city in great abundance, and he brought out the people who were in it, and put them to work with saws and iron picks and iron axes, and made them cross over to the brickworks. So he did to all the cities of the people of Ammon, and then David and all the people returned to Jerusalem.
Now, does that sound at all similar to what we just read in 1 Chronicles?
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds pretty much the same. So I break up verse 1 of 1 Chronicles 20 because there's this siege of Rabbah in Ammon. And during this siege, David is hanging out at Jerusalem. And what happens? He sees something he shouldn't see. What was it?
A woman bathing.
A woman bathing. And it happens to be Bathsheba, who was married to who? Uriah the Hittite. Now, we've seen that name before. Not if you're reading it straight. I think this is the first time we might be seeing it if we read it straight. But if we're reading it chronologically, like we've been doing, we read and we find out in 2 Samuel 23 that Uriah is one of David's mighty men. He is a loyal servant of David. And so then we see the depths of sin that David has fallen into. He is taking this man's wife, this loyal man's wife. And then we see later on, he ends up having him killed. And so that brings a lot of trouble for David. We see in chapter 12 that, well, the last verse of chapter 11, but the thing that David had done displeased the Lord. The Lord was not happy with David for doing this, for having. Now, did David murder Uriah outright?
He arranged for his death.
All right. So how did he arrange for his death?
He had to be put in the front line of battle.
Okay.
And he would be most likely to die.
So who is the one who actually struck the blow? It was the Ammonites. Right. David gave the order. Joab carried it through. And the Ammonites are the ones who actually did it. So what does that say about our own sin? Do we actually have to do the sin in order to be guilty of that sin? It's like, for instance, if you hire a hitman to kill somebody. I know that's not a common occurrence, but it is on TV sometimes. and it's like that. If you hire someone to murder somebody, if you do something that is that encourages sin, you become culpable in that sin as well. It is a sin of, you're an accomplice, you're an accessory, you are the one who orchestrates this thing, the mastermind, if you will. And so that goes with more than just murder, you know, that's just an extreme example, but it can go with just about any other kind of sin. And that's something we need to be careful of. You know, even if we don't pull the trigger, as it were, then we could still be responsible for something bad that happens. And that's something to be mindful of. We always need to be careful about sin and what things lead to. All right. I have this as 2 years before Solomon is born. And here's the reason. What is one of the penalties that Nathan says that David is going to experience? All right, so Bathsheba, because of the result of the adultery, Bathsheba becomes pregnant. And David tries to get Uriah to come by the house and try to make it less obvious that it was David's child. And he refuses. And so Uriah, because again, Uriah is loyal. He's not only loyal to his king, but he's loyal to his men. And he says, "I'm not going to be having fun at home while my men are at war. I'm going to be with them. I'm going to be stick it out with them." And that's a brand of loyalty that is hard to come by these days. And it's certainly someone who is not deserving of death, as we see that God was displeased with what had happened. So a child is born from this unholy union, and what we see is the penalty for this is that the child would die. So it takes about 9 months for a child to
be born,
gestate, right, form in the womb and to be born. So I make that about a year. So that's why I have on here 2992, and then a year later, 2993, David's son with Bathsheba is ill and dies. Now at around this time, we see one of the Psalms that David had written. And so let us hold our spot here in 2 Samuel and turn to Psalm 51. If someone would, please read the inscription.
To the chief musician, a psalm of David, when Nathan the prophet came unto him after he had gone into Bathsheba.
All right. So here we see a psalm of contrition. We see a psalm of a desire for forgiveness, a psalm of sadness over one's particular sin. Last week, I think it was, maybe it was the week before last, we talked about the Beatitudes, and we looked at those who mourn. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Well, when we sin, this is the kind of attitude we need to have that is mentioned here in this particular psalm. And it's 19 verses, and it shows just how sad he is over his sin, the anguish that he is experiencing as a result. I have here also a few other psalms that surround a particular sadness over sin, and a desire for forgiveness, and being thankful for being forgiven. And that's some of the psalms we have here. Psalm 38, Psalm 6, Psalm 32, and Psalm 103 all surround that kind of idea, and that's why they're placed here. They're in italics, so they don't have an inscription that necessarily pertains to the situation, but because of the content of the psalm, they're placed here. All right, so back in 2 Samuel, chapter 12, we see in verses 24 and 25 that David has a son with Bathsheba. And who was that son? He becomes the next king of Israel? Solomon. Solomon is that next king. And so I have him as a year later after this son, first son with Bathsheba dies. Solomon is born. Now we see in 2 Samuel chapter 5, I believe, a list of all the sons that were born to David while in Jerusalem. And in 2 Samuel 5, verses 13 through 16, and David took more concubines and wives from Jerusalem after he had come from Hebron. Also, more sons and daughters were born to David. Now, these are the names of those who were born to him in Jerusalem: Shammua, Shobab, Nathan, Solomon, Ibhar, Elishua, Naphag, Japhia, Elishama, Eliada, and Eliphelet. I decided to read that because of all the fun names in that. But we also see another list of those kinds of names in 1 Chronicles chapter 3. And we find out that those first four sons, Shammua, Shobab, Nathan, and Solomon, were all sons of Bathsheba as well. So these four sons of Bathsheba, they add a couple more that are not in this list here in 2 Samuel, but these are other brothers of Solomon, half-brothers. All right. And they don't really feature much anywhere else except for Nathan. Who is Nathan? What is he famous for? He's not the same Nathan the prophet. He's a different Nathan.
Okay, so he's not the one whose mother said, "I'm giving to you."
That's
good. No. So this is a little less, this is a little more esoteric. So I'd be surprised if a whole lot of people know this, but in Luke chapter 3 and Matthew chapter 1, we see the genealogies of Jesus, all right? And this is the point in which they diverge, all right? This is the point in which they diverge. We see that David begets Solomon, who begets Rehoboam, and so on, that we see for the Matthew genealogy, and in Luke's genealogy, we see it's David and then Nathan. So Nathan has the other line that's talked about there. Now, are these contradictory genealogies? No, why not? All right, one is the genealogy of Joseph, and the other one is the genealogy of Mary. That is right. So Joseph's genealogy is recorded in Matthew 1, and Mary's genealogy is recorded in Luke 3. And this is where they diverge. All right? So that's, I just wanted to throw that in there. I thought it would be interesting. All right. So there is some fallout from this particular sin that David committed. Let's read 2 Samuel chapter 12. Verses 11 through 14. If you got that, go ahead and read, please.
Thus saith the Lord, "Behold, I will raise up evil against thee out of thine own house, and I will take thy wives before thine eyes, and give them unto thy neighbor, and he shall lie with thy wives in the sight of this son. For thou didst it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel and before the sun." And David said unto Nathan, "I have sinned against the Lord." And Nathan said unto David, "The Lord also hath put away thy sin. Thou shalt not die. Howbeit, because by this deed thou hast given great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme, the children also that is born unto thee shall surely die."
All right, so that last verse is talking specifically about the child with, the first child with Bathsheba that David had. And so that is the immediate consequence of David's sin. But we see another consequence that's talked about earlier on, verses 11 and 12. 12, "You did it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel." And we see, we will soon see the fulfillment of that in a few chapters. And then perhaps one of the most In my opinion, one of the most uncomfortable chapters in the Bible is 2 Samuel 13. And I have there on the outline that this is Amnon violates Tamar. And this is one of the results. We see the adversities, the evil that comes up in David's house as a result of the sin. And one thing we should take note, does our sin only affect ourselves? No. Our sin affects other people. And that is what we will see in the next few chapters. We'll see that David's sin in his house because of what he did with Bathsheba will be the effects of that, the ramifications of that will be felt throughout the rest of David's reign. And particularly here in the life of Tamar. Tamar is David's daughter. There are other Tamars in Scripture, but there's this particular one is David's daughter. She is the full sister of Absalom. So we see up here several people, Amnon, Absalom, and Adonijah. All these have different mothers. These are the sons of David. And Tamar is the full sister of Absalom. And Amnon is like, well, she looks pretty nice. And as a result, forces himself upon her. Again, a very uncomfortable section of Scripture, I think. But that is what happens. And we can't sugarcoat it, and we can't ignore it. Let's take a look at the ages of these people. Now remember, these are approximate ages. And we'll see about how old they were when these things occurred. Amnon, I have, is about 17 when he does this. He's about 17. Now, he could be a few years older. He could be a few years younger. But I have him at about 17. Absalom, I have, is about 15. And boy, Absalom is not happy about this. In fact, he lets it fester for 2 full years, it says. And I have 1 year in the timeline here, and there's a reason for that. And hopefully that'll be proven more fully when we get to the divided kingdom. But it's the way they counted years sometimes. Sometimes it could be 2 years, sometimes 1 year. If they have any portion of a particular year, then they count that as a year. And so if it says 2 years, then it could be anywhere from a year and a month to a year to 2 full years, to 24 months. So it there's some wiggle room there with time. And it's maddening for this kind of study. Because sometimes they do that. And that's very evident when we look at the lengths of the reigns of the divided kingdom and how they compare with the other kings. And so we'll look at that when we get there. So with this particular situation, it says it's 2 years that Amnon is, or that Absalom is allowing this hatred for his half-brother Amnon to fester. And he ends up coming up with a plan to kill Amnon. So he does. Do you remember what David's reaction to Amnon's death was? And I point this out because there's also an interesting reaction to Absalom's death later on. But I want to point this out first. Amnon, first off, David is completely distraught because he believes that all of his sons have been murdered. And then someone comes up, a friend of Amnon, who kind of urged Amnon to do what he did before, comes up and says, no, it's not everyone who's killed, it's only Amnon who's dead. And so David takes it in stride. He might be upset, but he doesn't show it as much as one might think. And this is his oldest son, Amnon. So maybe he knows about, maybe he kind of expected this with Amnon, I don't know. Or maybe because sometimes the expectation, you expect, oh man, my kids are dead. Oh, just one? Okay, that's good. So you feel a little better about that than you would if all of them were dead. But even so, that's still an interesting reaction. All right. So then Absalom runs away. He kills Amnon. He runs away for 3 years. I have on here for 2 years. But he goes to Geshur. Why Geshur?
City of Amnesty?
No, it's a different country, in fact. Part of a different country. Because it says, he goes, Absalom fled in verse 37, but Absalom, of chapter 13, but Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Amihud, king of Geshur. And David mourned for his son every day. Mourned for Absalom, not for Amnon. So, it says that he goes to the king of Geshur. So it's not one of the sanctuary cities, not one of the cities of refuge. It is another place entirely. So why go there? That's where his mom's side of the family is from. His grandfather, his maternal grandfather, is Talmai. We can see that in 2 Samuel chapter 3, in verse 3, Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. So his maternal grandfather is Talmai, the king of Geshur. So he goes there for refuge away from the influence of David at that time. And he stays there for a few years. Joab eventually convinces David to bring Absalom back to Jerusalem, promises he doesn't kill him. And then Absalom stays in Jerusalem for another couple of years before he has an audience with the king. So several years are happening here. And it's taking a while for David to come up and actually see Absalom. I have on the timeline also that the Shulamite woman is born at around this time. Again, that is a guess. The Shulamite from the Song of Solomon, who, for the purposes of this timeline, I'm saying is Abishag, the Shunammite, from 1 Kings chapter 1. And I won't go over that again, but we'll talk more about Abishag when we get to 1 Kings 1. All right. Then, for a period of time, Absalom tries to curry favor with the people. He's undermining David's authority. He's saying, hey, this judgment that David and his judges gave, man, I would have done you better than that. I'd have done you better than that. And then he tries to undermine David's authority during this time. Now, the question is, how long a time is this? Let's go to 2 Samuel chapter 15. And he is doing this undermining in verses 1 through 6. So let's look at verse 7. What does that say?
Now it came to pass after 40 years that Absalom said to the king, please let me go to heaven and pay the vow which I made to the Lord.
How long? 40 years. Is that possible? How long was David's reign? 40 years. Do we have a problem? This is likely another one of the copyist errors that we see, that we've seen in several places already. Most scholars will say this is 4 years. That he's been doing this. So I have 4 years in my thing. Because in Hebrew, 40 and 4 look rather close together. And so it's possible that someone misread it at some point as they were copying it down and did that. So, and it came to pass after 4 years that Absalom said to the king, please let me go to Hebron and pay a vow. So what happens in Hebron? He crowns himself king, essentially. And all the people are like, oh, there's a king in Hebron. Absalom reigns. And David is like, oh my goodness, we've got a rebellion. We've got a coup on our hands. And so David ends up fleeing and running off. It's in times of distress that you find out who your real friends are. And we certainly see that in the next few chapters of 2 Samuel, who David's true friends are. So in the blue square that I have in the timeline, that's when David is on the run for the second time. As we see, the first time was during Saul's reign. So David flees. Then we see in chapter 15 that there are several people who are loyal to him. But before we do that, let's turn to Psalm 3. Psalm 3, and we'll read the inscription there. Whoever's got that.
A psalm of David when he fled from Absalom's son.
All right, so this expresses the pain that David experiences because his son has come up against him. And that is, that's what we see here in this particular psalm. All right, so backing up. Again, we see who David's true friends are. We have an interesting one that comes up first here in verse 19, Ittai the Gittite. 2 Samuel 15, verse 19. Ittai the Gittite. Someone who is a Gittite, where is that person from? You know, if you're an American, you're from America. So if you're a Gittite, you are from... You would think, but really you're from Gath. So someone who is a Gittite is from Gath. Now where is Gath? Who else is famous from Gath? Goliath. Goliath of Gath, right? And who was Goliath? What country was he from? What nationality? The Philistines. So Ittai, the Gittite, is a Philistine. It says here he's a foreigner, and yet he becomes so fiercely loyal to David during this time. And it says, literally, you just came here yesterday. Why are you going to come with me? Now, he might not literally mean yesterday. It might just mean you came here recently. But basically, he's saying, you came here just recently to serve me. Why would you follow me? And then he says, I am loyal to you. And so that's an amazing thing. And in fact, later on, we see that his name, Ittai, is spoken in the same breath often as Joab and Abishai. So we have Joab, Abishai, and Ittai. Now, Joab and Abishai were brothers, and we see previously that it used to be Joab, Abishai, and Asahel. But of course, Asahel is killed early on in David's reign. And so it's just Joab and Abishai for a while, and now Ittai is added to it. So that's an interesting thing, that he just decides, I'm going to be loyal to you. Maybe he recognizes who David is. Maybe he recognizes that David is a man after God's own heart. Maybe he realizes that David is the one he needs to follow. I don't know. It doesn't say, but certainly an interesting thing to consider. We have a few other people who are loyal to David. The priests, Zadok and Abiathar, they are loyal to David. And David says, no, don't follow after me. Go on back and do your priestly thing as you are meant to do. And in fact, I believe, if I remember correctly, yeah, they carry the Ark of the Covenant with them. So the Ark is taken out of Jerusalem and is carried with them to go on with David wherever he's going. And David is like, no, take it back. Take it back. Thank you for your loyalty, but you've got to serve the people. And then Hushai comes. Hushai comes. Now, have we met Hushai yet? Unless we're doing this thing chronologically like I've mentioned, he's mentioned in 1 Chronicles chapter 27 when all of David's officers are talked about there. And he's mentioned in the same breath as Ahithophel, the same verse as Ahithophel. Ahithophel is one of the trusted advisors of David. And here's where we see another divide here. Ahithophel goes with Absalom. And Hushai, another advisor, goes with David. But David is like, well, no, you're going to hold us back. You're going to be a burden to us. So Hushai the Archite, he says, go back and essentially be a spy. Offer Absalom bad advice. And so that's ultimately what they do, be an informant, be an inside man. And that's what Hushai becomes. He becomes an inside man for David in Absalom's court. All right, we're running out of time. We've just started talking about fleeing from Absalom, and we'll see in a little bit. I think we're about to start chapter 16. But Ahithophel, let's look, since we've talked about him. And we don't have a lot of time. I don't want to go into the next thing just yet. Let's go to 1 Chronicles 27. If you remember, when we talked about 1 Chronicles 27 last time, I left off the last verse. Because we'll see after David returns, I have on here David reestablishes his officers. And I have 1 Chronicles 27:34, the last verse here. So let's look at 33 and 34. Ahithophel was the king's counselor, and Hushai the Archite was the king's companion. After Ahithophel was Jehoiada the son of Benaiah, then Abiathar, and the general of the king's army was Joab. And so that general of the king's army was Joab is actually throughout David's reign. But we see that it says after Ahithophel. So Ahithophel dies at some point, while David is on the run, and we'll talk about that when we get there. And he appoints somebody else when David comes back to power. All right, so now we're going to see the loyalties divide. We've already seen Ittai, the priests, and Hushai go after David, and Ahithophel going after Absalom. And we'll see who else sides with David and sides with Absalom later on. All right, any comments or questions before we end for today?
Was Joab the son of who is he?
He is the son of Zeruiah, who is David's sister. And we see that in 1 Chronicles chapter 2, I believe. And then another person shows up, Amasa, later on, who becomes the general of Absalom's army, and he is also a nephew of David and a cousin of Joab. And he'll show up in a little bit. All right, any other comments or questions? All right, thank you.